Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 332 of the Mighty Whites podcast. I'm Jack, as always, John back here.
Now,
how's things, mate?
Fine.
How's things football aside?
Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. I mean, it says a lot that I've had like car trouble today and had to do a load of pissing about, and I was still in a perfectly good mood until I started thinking about Leeds United. I've titled it "Should Leeds United Sack Daniel Farke?" But we will talk about the Forest game first, because the Farke thing, it might not go on for that long, but it's likely to be the main part. So, Leeds made a couple of changes. Metcher came in, that being the main one, and Stack came back into the midfield to be sort of the more solid thing. And we'll get the nice thing out of the way at the start. Longstaff wins a header. Okafor battles well, takes two Forest players out of the play into Aronson. Aronson plays it to Metcher. Really nice little step and shift and a really good finish into the bottom corner. Like, really good goal. Exactly what you want to see out of your number nine.
Yeah, it's a really tidy finish, to be fair. I'm just trying to think in the build-up to this, because obviously what are we, 11, 12 minutes in when this goes in?
I did look early. I think it said 13th minute.
Yeah, so not a lot had happened. I think obviously kind of in the lead up to this, the biggest chance had actually been Perry making that save that was then kind of ruled offside anyway.
Yeah, it would have been offside, but it was like a world-class save.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. Like, and those were, you know, two moments of genuine quality. And given Calvert-Lewin's recent finishing, that might even be enough for Metcher to keep his place. But, you know, with being an international break, there's loads of time yet, so we'll see. However, I would say that from that moment on, there are no positives to say about this game.
I'm going to say there is one.
Oh, then please.
Oh, it was that really good run by Gabriel Goodmanson.
Oh, yeah, that was really good.
That was genuinely fantastic. That aside, yeah, I'm totally with you.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Remember that, his ability to drive us forward and beat a player and get a ball in the box, because it might become relevant later on. Leeds just patiently knocking the ball around in harmless areas, actively playing against the strengths of the players on the pitch. Forest had, like, the better of it before the goal, really. That Perry save being the main one. But you get 1-0 up, you've got, that's, you know, you're with mum, 1-0 ahead, right. Just no, stupid. And about 90 seconds after the goal, Dan and Doy faces up Ampadu, who, having watched it back, he doesn't really attempt to close it down, nor does he really attempt to block the cross. And he sort of gets away with it because Dan and Doy puts in a fairly poor cross. And Lucas Perry just pushes it out into the centre of goal. And Ibrahim Zingari is there. And remember this phrase, he's totally unmarked centre of goal to finish a simple chance. Now, it's shit goalkeeping. But the shit goalkeeping bit isn't interesting. It's just a mistake. That's poor. There isn't really much else to say about it. How the fuck is a player unmarked like 10 yards out centre of goal and there's not a Leeds player within 5 yards of him in any direction?
Yeah, like you say, it's how switched off we are to the entire situation within seconds of going in front. Just, I'm literally just watching it back now. We've got, I'm looking here, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I think we've got 8 or 9 players in the penalty area when the ball goes in the back of the net.
And no one is anywhere near where the danger is.
10. Just the only one who's not is Lucas Metcher. He's the only one not in the penalty area by the time the ball hits the back of the net. And yeah, they're just all over the place. Like you said, Ampadu probably could do better, I think, in the, when he's standing him up. Goodmanson's gone out wide to cover the fullback. Ampadu's with Ndoye. Okafor's jogging back, and then I'm just sort of looking. Longstaff is kind of in sort of towards the edge of the area. Bogle's on the penalty spot. Stack's tracking back. And then by the time the ball goes in, we seem to have four or five players going towards the same ball.
Yeah.
On the edge of the 6-yard box. So that's why there's no one on the edge to shut it down. They've all gone for a ball that should be dealt with probably by the centre backs.
Yeah.
And it's just such a lack of organisation or awareness that you would expect players like Longstaff, Longstaff and Bogle to be aware of and to have the vaguest amount of trust in either the centre backs or Lucas Perry to deal with it. And even if he deals with it by parrying it, brilliant. You've got a central midfielder there to smash it clear, but we don't.
Now, it's a real lack of awareness, and it's, you know, again, totally unmarked, middle of goal. The first goal against Burnley, someone totally unmarked, middle of goal. I know that it didn't end up costing us, but West Ham's goal, we leave someone completely unmarked in middle of box. It seems to be like a real problem. And vis-a-vis the conceding similar goals over and over again, you know, it happened at Brighton over and over again. It's always the sign of when it's really starting to go bad. Because I mean, we got in at half-time at 1-1, but it was entirely Forest's half for the rest of the half. Like, we offered nothing.
Yeah, like I said, there's so little to pin your hat on. And I think you, kind of from listening to, and in the last couple of days, I've listened to absolutely everything, you know, Square Ball. I've listened to Don't Go to Bed Just Yet. Just anything, basically, at this point. And I think it's that thing of just going, well, kind of what is our identity here? Because are we the transfer policy seemed to be right? We are going to build a physical team that can. I assumed we were going to be a bit like Brentford.
Well, like last when you looked at Brentford, the players on paper, that is the sort of thing you'd have thought.
But it very much feels like this is the tactical direction that was chosen by the people buying the players, and no one checked with Daniel Farker if that's how he wanted them to play. Because I don't know, do we do anything that uses any of these big players' height?
Not very often. The Bournemouth game is the exception, where they pressed us well enough that they actually went, oh no, we'll go long, and suddenly we started playing well. Because we started playing to the strengths of the players we had at our disposal. So, half-time, one apiece, Leeds offering almost nothing. And Forest were better in the second half as well at the start. But we didn't look in, like, that much trouble. So, in the 59th minute, Sean Dyche makes a triple change. Yates for Sangare. Sangare was on a yellow. So that one, I think, was just clever. But Amari Hutchinson for Nicolas Dominguez and Taiwo Wonye for Igor Jesus. Because Sean Dyche saw this isn't going well enough for us to win this game. So he made changes that he thought would make them more likely to win the game. Daniel Farker, unsurprisingly, did nothing. Because even when whether it's going well or badly, we know that he doesn't make changes. And then 10 minutes later, long crossfield ball from Mario to Amari Hutchinson, who beats Goodmanson. Again, it's a little bit weak with all that, but this one looked a bit more like the good wing play, more than poor defending. But what's more indefensible is just what happens around Morgan Gibbs-White in the middle. And this one I have watched back, because he was so unmarked that I was baffled. So when the long ball gets hit, Gibbs-White is next to Goodmanson. And Goodmanson has to go out to Hutchinson, and he passes him on to Yakabiol, who's behind him. While the ball's out wide, Ampadu also drops in. So Biol is like just goal side of Gibbs-White, and Ampadu is on the other side of him on his right shoulder. They're in like a good position to defend from. Like they're really set well. And Amari Hutchinson shifts the ball to cross it. While he does that, Morgan Gibbs-White takes two steps backwards. Not makes a darting run. He doesn't feint to go forward and drop a shoulder. He just steps backwards. And Beal Nampadu take a step forward and then stand like fucking statues. And just leave him, and I said to remember this phrase, totally unmarked, centre of goal to finish the simple chance. Honestly, I was annoyed when I watched it live, and then I watched it back just before we started, and I cannot believe how fucking bad this defending is. Like, it's fucking shameful. If, bearing in mind what Twitter is like about Pascal Strauch, if Pascal Strauch had done this, someone would have gone to his house. Like, it was such bad defending. And, like, there's Joe Roden behind him, and I've seen some people saying he should come across. And given that they've left him, maybe he should. But he's got a 1 year coming in behind him.
He's doing his job.
He's doing his job. The only reason he maybe needs to come across is because between Ampadu and Beal, and I'm more, Beal's the one that's goal side, so it's much more Beal for me. He's the one that can see everything in front of him.
Yeah.
You just can't do that. That's such bad defending. And that's meant to be the thing that he's really good at, box defending, getting his head on things, getting in, you know, physically being able to stand up to a striker. And it's not like, oh, he's got bullied aerially by this big, massive striker. It's Morgan Gibbs-White. He's a fucking number 10.
Yeah. I've frozen the rally lights video of just every Leeds player just staring at Morgan Gibbs-White as the ball's about a second away from hits, you know, from landing on his head. I totally agree with you in as much as Beal is goal side, he should take ownership of that.
Yeah.
Whether there needs to be some awareness from Ampadu to tell him to drop a little bit, I don't know. Jaden Bogle.
Maybe, but he should know that himself.
Oh yeah. Jaden Bogle's also got an interesting position because he seems to be in line with Joe Roden, but about 7 yards forward. So I'm not entirely sure where he was going in this situation either. But I think he's quite low down the list of...
Yeah, he's far enough away that, like, in theory, if Roden's on a 1 year, whoever is sort of coming in from that side, whether that's another winger or Nico Williams, would be...
Yeah.
Bogle would be ready to pick them up if they ran into the box.
But again, I'm just looking at this flat line of people just all staring at Morgan Gibbs-White. He just stood there with a good 3 yards on anyone.
It's Leeds have got a habit. You know, we've been going a very long time. We've seen Leeds concede shit goals for a long time. There's been worse, don't get me wrong. But this one really stuck. That phrase that Megan used, stuck in my craw. it's been bugging me ever since.
Yeah, it's literally indefensible.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of, I hope before Daniel Farker opened his mouth, just Joe Roden is just pointing and shouting at people. I look at him at times and think, God, he's an angry man. But I think in these situations, like, no, he's completely right. Yeah. Like, this is...
But again, it's like, obviously, the goal is like that. I am not really having a go at Farker on the goal. Because 3 seconds before the goal, they're in a decent position. And they just switch off and stop doing it. Now that isn't on Farker. But the fact that we've been shit all game, and that's the 68th minute, no changes made. That bit is. And it's in the 74th minute that Fark finally noticed that we've been shit for all of about 3 minutes. And makes changes. Calvert-Lewin on for Metcher, James for Aronson, Peru for Longstaff to go more 4-2-3-1. Right. Peru was not really involved.
I'm going to say now, as a triple substitution to make, it's late, but but it's absolutely the right change to
make. Yeah, it's logical. I have no issue with the
actual... As you say, we have gone to 4-2-3-1. It makes sense. You could debate if you're going to do that, if there was any merit on keeping Aronson on and having him in the middle for the pressing side of things. But you put Pirro on because of his finishing ability.
Yeah.
Like that, and it all makes sense. Calvert-Lewin, fresh pair of legs. And Dan James, who was fit enough to start this game.
Yeah.
Right.
He Farke made clear that he was fit. Also, we'll talk about Willie Nonto after the game.
Yeah. So Dan James, who from the bits I've heard, Farke has said he didn't play. The interesting bit, that, and again, they discuss this on Don't Go to Bed Just Yet. When he's brought up, the first thing they talk about is that Farke mentions is him coming in on the left for Okafor.
Yeah.
Which I did find, whether it's because it's a question that you've just been thrown and that's the first name that comes to your head, may well be. But there is a part you're thinking, you've played Dan James solely at right wing this last 18 months. Very, very rarely have I seen him on the left-hand
side.
You'd
be looking at maybe, I don't know, 50 minutes across a season.
Not one of us was thinking, oh yeah, Okafor out.
Yeah.
But yeah, James comes on, and within 3-4 minutes of him coming on, we have our first shot on target, I believe, since the goal.
Yeah. Yeah, our only effort of significance is that one. Because it then comes out to Goodmanson, he like drives it across and Calvert-Lewin puts it wide, if I remember rightly.
Hmm.
And he might have even been offside, I can't remember. But that was like our only attack where I thought, oh, we might score here. Post us scoring.
Yeah. But like I say, tactically, going 4-2-3-1 makes sense. You're now chasing the game. Get another attacker on there. Absolutely fine. And if we didn't make any other substitutions, or if we only made half of the last substitutions, you'd probably be fine with it.
Yeah, like, it's not great, but it was a logical change. And to be honest, because the ones that he makes in 82 minutes, I don't think Strouk for Beol is a bad change. They're gonna drop in and defend, you would think. Strouk is a better passer of the ball. He's more comfortable stepping up with it. He's a really good threat at set pieces. Peru's on the pitch by this point, so you don't need to worry about the penalty side so much. But he's an option for that
Jack
as well.
Jack, as if I go in a penalty area.
I know. But like, I honestly don't think that Strouk for Beol was a bad change.
That one, the next change.
But Harrison for Goodmanson. Right. This is not hindsight. We watched this in a pub. Everyone, to a person, said, really? And then, having checked Twitter, that's what everyone else thought as well. Now, the principle of, we're going to bring on a winger and play him from deep. It's a more attacking player. All right, at the very base level, I can get that. But who's more likely to beat a man, Goodmanson or Harrison?
Very much at the moment is Gabriel Goodmanson.
Who do you think is more likely to get a decent ball in the box?
It's Goodmanson. And who was our best player in this game?
Yeah,
on the most base level, he was our best player in this game. Not that it takes a lot at the moment, but like beggars belief, this one. I would have understood it if it was just a Jack, get up there. If something gets, you know, try and get on a knockdown, try and get a ball in. Just straight in at left back.
Yeah. Now you've got, really, if he was going to make a fifth sub, Tanaka for one of the more defensive midfielders, maybe. You could make an argument for. But like Harrison, it's not like he's been coming on and doing well in games.
No.
I don't know the exact stats, but I did see him. It was something like he attempted 4 take-ons and failed all of them. He did nothing with the ball, and then he gave away a penalty. But him giving away a penalty, I'm not even that mad at him for.
No, I don't think he should have been in that position.
Yeah, but he's trying to chase back in a bit of an emergency situation while playing out of position. It's not ideal. Like, if you maybe Okafor was a bit tired and Farke was thinking of taking him off. I don't know. Maybe if you put this Italian international that we've got on the bench, instead of having very specifically told us all he is fit to start and it's no longer a risk. But no, he's left him out and then giving an interview talking about how, no, it's about form. I'm sorry, what, because Aronson and Harrison are playing so fucking brilliantly? It's a level of ball. It's one of the reasons why I've turned so much when it comes to Farke. I, you know, when someone just is quite clearly lying. Because he's either lying or completely incompetent. And I don't think he's completely incompetent. I just think he's lost. I think that a lot of it does come down to that stuff you were saying about how these players are not for what he wanted. And he's too stubborn / too tactically naive to be able to change.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. We all knew, and Farke even publicly said, that one, he still wanted another attacking player. We assume a number 10.
Yeah. A number 10 or a winger that can play that sort of style.
Yeah.
AKA Harry Wilson.
Yeah.
or, who we actually wanted, Emi Buendia. Yeah.
I'll ask you this then, in terms of, so we have very much been this 4-3-3, this system. Is that because of not getting that attacking player? Or do you think he would have gone ahead with this system? Let's say it was Buendia.
If it was Buendia, he plays 4-2-3-1. I'm pretty sure. If it's Wilson, it's probably still a 4-3-3. And he plays him off the right.
I very much feel now that Farke has, and I understand in the beginning, going for the 4-3-3, you are going for a, you know, you haven't got the players you wanted. That's fine. Let's solidify in the middle, make us hard to break down. On a base level, I get that.
And I don't even think it went badly at the start. I think we were doing all right.
No, I mean, you look to, the problem is, we started well enough with, obviously, we beat Everton, pretend Arsenal never happened, 0-0 draw with Newcastle, which was a very well-battled performance. And I'll come on to that in a second. And then you beat Wolves, you know, around that time. And yeah, there's a couple of bits here and there. We should, you know, probably should have got something against Fulham. But on the whole, things were fine for where we were expecting to be. I don't feel like we've seen the combativeness in a few weeks now that we were showing, I would say, probably about a month or so ago. Kind of that scrappiness. It feels like that's dropped off a bit. And whether that's a newly promoted, I've got this energy, we're riding the crest of a wave, and that has now gone, I don't know. But we also haven't kept a clean sheet since that Newcastle game.
No, and like it's not just like it's a couple of the players. Because like one that we barely mentioned Longstaff. But the Longstaff that we saw against like Newcastle and Bournemouth is not the player that we have seen since.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, there's a lot of that. And that is another thing that makes you wonder how the atmosphere is in the dressing room, how Farke's doing with it. Because like this, and maybe that Nonto stuff is a symptom of that. Like, I don't mind the 4-3-3 itself as a way to set up the games. But you have to be able to change the way you're playing for certain situations. When you're in the Championship with probably the best squad in the league, you can play your way and it's going to work you're going to look better than the opposition in 40 out of 46 games, and you can just keep doing what you're doing and doing it well, and you can make like-for-like changes, and it'll work most of the time. But in any game where it wasn't going well, we complained about his in-game management in the Championship all the time, and it's a bigger issue now.
Yeah.
You need to be able to change a game when it's going badly, when there's a decent shot that a lot of your games are going to be going badly at some point in the Premier League when you're newly promoted team. And I just don't see how, if we start a game really well, we'll probably be fine. But if we don't, I just don't see how he's going to change it into a game where we do well.
No, there is a part of me wondering now if he looks at this situation and think, bollocks to it, I'm going to go back to the 4-2-3-1. I'm going to play the system I want to play.
Yeah.
And because I think in terms of the personnel, one, it allows him to accommodate Brendan Aaronson,
which he clearly wants to do.
It's like he seems very set on having, like, you get the defensive work out of Dan James, not as effectively as Brendan Aaronson does it in terms of the quality of his pressing, but Dan James works up and down.
Yeah, and he's rapid, so there's no substitute for just being really fast.
Yeah. I very much think he should, for me at this point, it's a, because I think you've said as well, and I've heard Graham Smith as well, it does not sound like there's any thought about getting rid of Farker.
No, I'm taking my cue off Graham Smith on that. He basically said that he'd be amazed. He's a nothing of the sort. So,
yeah.
As much as half the fan base probably would at the minute, it's not happening.
So whether Aston Villa, whether that becomes something of a last stand, and
he kind of, like, Villa are a good side, and I think he sort of has to win that game.
I mean, we could. This was the thing I was thinking about. If you don't beat Villa or get something off Villa, we could feasibly lose 6 games in a row.
Yeah, quite easily. Well, I mean, I've got the table up in a tab here. And if you go from the bottom, Wolves, we've played them. Forest, we've played them. West Ham, we've played them. Burnley, we've played them. Us. Fulham, who we've played. Newcastle, who we've played. Everton, who we've played.
And Brighton in 11th.
Yeah, and Brighton in 11th. There's only Brentford in the bottom half that we haven't already played.
It's a scary thought, is that? I'm not going to lie to you. Yeah. I've never looked at it that way, but that's...
You're going 11 points from 11 games. Well, a point per game, if you do that all season, you'll probably stay up. But if you've done a point per game against the worst teams in the league, like, I think we... For example, look, I know that I'm a big pessimism bets guy, and I've mentioned it on here before. I can't believe we're still, like... I think you can still get, like, 2-1 on us to get relegated. And I look at that bottom at table, and, like, I do think we're better than Wolves, but I think they're the only team I could say we're definitely better than. And I am just, maybe I'm too close to it. Maybe I am a pessimist and I'm just catastrophizing, but I think we're seriously deep in the shit.
I mean, I don't know at the moment. I look at, Villa have kind of hit their form. I couldn't go so far as to say is I'd be shocked if we beat them. Like, I think it is doable. It's the couple after that that obviously sort of Chelsea and Man City specifically out of those. Liverpool a bit more hit miss, although still absolute quality.
Yeah, there's just so many good players in that side. Even if they're not playing well.
Yeah. But I don't know if I was speaking to you about it. I think on Sunday, I think I mentioned it to Brad, in as much as the pros and cons of, do you wait get this bad run out of the way with, put all of that on Farke and then look to get someone else in when things look a bit better.
Which, but to be honest, if they're not doing it in the international break, looking at the fixtures, I don't think there's any point doing it until after the Liverpool game.
Yeah, like if you want to take anything out of the new manager bounce, you probably want that to be in a more winnable game.
Yeah, because after Liverpool, Brentford away, Palace at home, Sunderland away. That's if they are thinking that, if you're not doing it in the international break, I think that you do wait until after Liverpool and just hope. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. I hope Daniel Farke, I hope we beat Villa and then he gets some results against teams we really don't expect it to. And all of a sudden we're like, I was wrong. Cool.
Well, that's it. It is a lot easier to say than actually achieving it. Beat Villa and you get a point out of one of those three games and you've still got your point per game.
Yeah.
Grand. The downside to it is if you have that run and we get spectacularly walloped by three of those teams,
yeah.
Is it the case where a new manager comes in or the morale's already through the floor?
Which is what we saw last time we went down.
Yeah. Now,
because at the end of that, at the end of the Marsh bit and afterwards, we weren't just getting beat. It was really, even the scores that weren't hammerings, it was so one-sided and we're conceding such poor goals. And it's for conceding the same goal over and over again. That's the bit that's sort of grabbing me. Because the end, as much as the end of Bielsa, we kept conceding the same goal. The end of Marsh, we kept conceding the same goal. Gracia, even. It's a really bad sign when the same thing is happening over and over again and nothing's being done to change it.
Yeah. Like I say, I'd at least rather him go with the 4-2-3-1 and give us something to work on.
Even if it's Aronson at 10, he doesn't have the quality to play in the Premier League, but if that's what he wants to play.
Yeah, and look, he will have to explain his decisions to the next potential employer. And again, if I'm someone who's watched any of Leeds, he just go, so what does Brendan Aronson have on you? But you need someone closer to the centre forward. This system you have currently, if you're sticking with Aronson, and there's a very good chance Aronson plays on the right wing again for the next game. Aronson is not known for beating a fullback and putting a cross in.
No.
Okafor is not known for putting crosses in. His job is getting inside and getting shots away or squaring it across the box.
Yeah, he can do it, but standing up a fullback and going more direct at the box is more his thing.
And yet we have centre forwards who are needing service in the penalty area.
Yeah.
But we don't have the players in the team that play that way. Putting Dan James in would certainly help that because he is very much I'm going to beat a man. Yeah. I will get it in the box.
That you said about the strikers being that type is one of the things that still makes me think player three at the back and free up Goodmanson and Bogle.
Yeah.
To have a bit more of a go. And I don't think for a second he's ever going to do it, which is why, I've mentioned it on there a few times. I really do think with the players we have, that's probably our best shape. But I don't think we're ever going to see it, or at least no time soon.
No, and it's why, it's who would you have, if you do the 4-2-3-1 now, who would you have play alongside Ampadu?
If I was doing it now...
Because again, it's like... We can all speculate of what ideal partnership we'd like there. It's going to be Ampadu.
Yeah, and the problem is, I don't think Longstaff's playing well. I don't think Stack's playing well. And I don't think Tanaka was playing great either when he played.
Hmm.
So, because I want someone who is, who has a bit more on the ball, gun to my head, I'd say Tanaka. But I think you could argue for any of them, and it's none of them unreasonable. if everyone's playing like they were at the start of the season, then stack. But right now, I mean, yeah. Ampadu's not playing well either.
No, I think it's probably stack because you get the set pieces then as well.
Yeah.
And
if Longstaff's not playing, someone has to sack him.
Yeah.
Paul really agree with. We didn't even mention him.
No, I think Arsenal may have been the end of Ilya Gruev as a Premier League player. We might see him again in about 9 months' time. But
we'll see him in January when we got knocked out at Bradford City. They might already be out of the FA Cup. I haven't checked.
I'm telling you now, it's either Birmingham or Wrexham.
Okay.
It's one of those two. It's away. It's Monday night. And it's going to go horrendously. And both strikers are going to get injured.
Yeah.
Which leads to the emergency rehiring of Patrick Bamford. But yeah, like it's very much. I would much rather see Daniel Farke die on his feet at this point and just go, you know what? Look, I am a 4-2-3 man, and most managers these days, the vast majority of managers. They have their system. They have their style of play. So I don't begrudge him that because you bring managers in and that's typically the case. There's very few who will actually turn up at a club and go, this is what this team needs. I'm going to play this way. You know, if you were a Scum fan last season, you're just looking, going, look, I know you want to play this 3-4-3. It's bollocks right now. Play a 4-2-3-1. Win half your games and you'll be fine.
And do it in the summer if you really want to switch to this.
But it is now just a case of struggling to see where we are going to get points from these next four. And I can't see us becoming magically more solid over the international break. Like, two of your main central defenders will be away.
Yeah.
The one that's still there is not going on international duty and probably not going to be back in the starting lineup.
You'll still have Strout there, but Bornau, who, I forget, plays for Leeds. He's injured anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it's a tough one.
There's a few people who were just kind of going through. There was about three players in our starting lineup who you could say they need to start. The majority of the players I do look at and just think they are a bit interchangeable. I think it was Roden, Gudmundsson, and
I'd say Roden, and Gudmundsson, Bogle, Okafor.
And to be honest, even Jaden Bogle, and I'm not particularly low on his performances. I think his performances have been very much in line with the team performances. Mm. But it's also the fact that with the fullbacks, you have no competition there. Unless he commits to Justin coming in and getting a run, but it very much feels like he is the backup fullback.
Yeah. He's also, just because I do have to mention it, he's also quite comfortable playing as a wide centre back in a three. And has played a lot of football there.
That's the
other thing. I think that the best combination, if we're going to actually create things, I think our best combination on the right-hand side is Bogle-Nonto. And I've given up all hope on that being the thing. So,
I mean, it's beggar's belief when you are in the position we are in, that you feel that you can be choosy with players of that quality. Mm. Don't get me wrong. I don't think Willy Nonto, if he left right now, is going into a top half Premier League team or anything like that. But he is a better wide player than Brendan Aaronson.
Yeah.
I think he could comfortably be the number 10 in this team. If you needed him to be.
Yeah. And the other thing with him is, as well, Like, I know that he gives away stupid fouls because he's not a good tackler, really. But there's no lack of industry there when he's pressing or he's chasing back. Or he will put in the hard yards when he needs to. It's not like, oh, we can't play him because he's a luxury player. I don't think he is.
No, and also, even if it's just to have on the bench, you have a player who can play any three of the attacking midfield positions and as a striker.
Yeah.
Like, that makes all the sense in the world to have someone like that on the bench. Like, someone that versatile. Because I compare that to Harrison, going off with the wingers from Sunday, Harrison and James. Dan James is a right winger. Yeah. Can play off the left, but he is very much a right winger. Jack Harrison can play on the right, is very much a left winger.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm bringing either one of those two on, it's on their strong foot side.
Yeah, and you're not likely to... Like, sort of, I know that this sounds basic, but, Casey, if you're playing FM, don't you want your subs? You always have people who can play multiple positions in that on the bench. Because
yeah.
It just makes it easy. Because it makes you more adaptable. And that's the thing. Farker doesn't give a fuck about being adaptable.
Yeah. At the end, like you say, you kind of look down that list of the attacking subs. Fair enough. You play one centre forward. I can kind of get that you want a like-for-like replacement on the bench for that. That's fine. But after that, it's I'm looking, like, I look at our midfield three now, it just feels a bit Warnock generic centre mid, yeah, in our midfielders at the moment.
Yeah. It's Michael Tong and Michael Tong and Michael Tong.
Well, we've got big Michael Tong.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I at this stage, I don't really know the difference between Stack and Longstaff, and I feel like I should.
I know what you mean. Like, I do think Stack has a bit more to him. Longstaff, I think, has a bit more combat in him. But based on the last five games, you wouldn't be able to know that.
Yeah, but I also don't really know the role, like, their role. I don't really know the identity of our team.
No.
If I'm being honest. Because I know, if we lose possession in their half, we will defend from the halfway line. We default into a 4-1-4-1 and defend from the halfway line. That's about it. Like, we're not a counter-attacking team.
No, actually, that reminds me. Did you see the graph that was going around Twitter?
No.
Leeds have the slowest build-up back to front of any team in the league, with Dominic Calvert-Lewin up front.
Mm.
We have bought specifically players for attack, getting the ball forward quickly and attacking quickly, and then we have the slowest team in build up of any team in the league.
Yeah.
That's where it just doesn't make sense.
Like, at least last year. And this will be that. I mean, I assume that's very much the statistics that backs up your dad's belief in the way we should play with this team. But at least last year, you could say, like, I know we turned down these chances for the ball over the top, but it's fine because we'll still probably go and score three goals in this game anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and in the Championship, we could just pen a team in for 75 minutes. And if you do that against Championship defenders for 75 minutes, even if they're playing brilliantly, they're going to eventually switch off and you're going to break through.
Yeah.
There might be two games a season where you don't. This is not that.
No. And frustratingly, I'd be very interested to see the numbers for Calvert-Lewin's aerial duels. But on the eye test, he seems to do pretty well. And he can win headers well. He can bring balls down well. The only thing I sort of wish I could see a bit more from him was that he maybe win a few more fouls kind of on the back of long balls up to him, but that's sort of lower down the priority list. But he does seem to compete well enough for a centre forward playing up front on his own there. And there just isn't the service around him or the support around him to carry us forward from that position.
Yeah.
Like you said, where if you had a Joel Piru in and around there feeding off that, I mean, that the reason we get annoyed at Joel Piru comes on and then you see him trying to pick the balls off the centre-back and you're thinking, it's because you're not playing it long. That's why he's going there.
Yeah, if you were just bashing a ball up to Calvert-Lewin for him to flick on or knock down, he would go stand near Calvert-Lewin. He wouldn't go stand near Joe Roden.
Yeah, but you know, it's the same, and it's the same with a few teams. And we had a few games already this season where you get really annoyed with it, where you're just looking going, why are we passing this ball across our back line? The Spurs game. I think was the kind of the prime example of just, no, you've put the bodies up there now. Just hit it to them.
Yeah.
That's the purpose of these big lads up there. But it's again that you're at that point now where you're going, it must be an instruction.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what you're saying is, your centre-backs are idiots. They have the ball there, and they're not just looking going, well, we've got Mechia and Calvert-Lewin on the pitch and Joel Piru's just off them. You know what? I'm going to square it to Joe Roden.
Yeah. And Ali's just come in the comment saying, DCL and Mechia, old-fashioned strikers, built for playing as a pair. And you definitely could play them as a pair, but even when we do, we don't use them properly. It's weird. I suppose it just gets us to the last thing on Farke. We've talked about most of it on and off. But the one of the things that does argue well for keeping him in the job is who's out there.
Well, this is it.
Like, is there anyone out there that you think is definitely an upgrade? Like, because we need to be better defensively, even though Valencia haven't been great this season, I do think Corbrand probably would be. But not by like so much that I'm jumping up and down saying you have to do this immediately.
Yeah. And like I said, there's kind of talks of like, obviously given the ownership, do you look within the Red Bull stable for anything? But our style of football doesn't match the continental Red Bull style.
No, it is way too early to even worry about it. But I believe there is a market out there, and I think Marco Rosa is favourite.
But in terms of, firstly, anyone who's out of a job, nothing in particular. The two you would speak about in these situations have both already been hired this season.
Yeah,
now,
because if either Nuno or Deitch was available, I would be saying do it. And the problem is that when Deitch is less of a thing, because Deitch you could. I think you maybe could have done it. At the time Nuno was available, we'd started well.
Yeah.
And so you can't, I can't have hindsight on that. And I mean, it's, I did
and also,
say,
and also when started it happened, the season I, with a club.
Yeah. When it did, when Marinakis did sack Nuno, like people did go, to be honest, I'd rather have him than Farke. And there were people, I wasn't one of them because I thought we'd started okay, so I wasn't thinking about it. But there was people going, I know we've started well, but we should sack Farke and get him immediately. So other people can claim it's not hindsight. For me, it would be hindsight, so I'd be being disingenuous if I said, oh, we should get him. But the Deitch thing, he does seem like sort of really suited to this squad.
Yeah.
And like, but Forest squad is way better. But also, Forest squad is way better than us, so that will just be the same, but suiting better.
Yeah, it's yeah. I'd like to say I don't know who we go after. There's no one in particular I can think of off the top of my head. There's not even really anyone in the Championship that I'd think about taking a punt on at this point.
So what you're saying is you're not looking at, ooh, who's top of the Championship right now?
Yeah.
It tells me that wouldn't be a good fit. I also, because he's not that much of an idiot, he would turn it down.
Yeah, I can't unless he took it as a very bold Brian Clough like step
Although it, I just say because it is always in there, and I say it every time because I know there's people at Leeds like him. There's been too much stories about it not to be. Never rule out Steven Gerrard because people at Leeds like Steven Gerrard. It comes up every single time. His name gets leaked to journalists every single time. They wanted him in at Rangers, and it's the same people.
Could they? I was going to say, can they not get him back to Rangers so we can?
They tried. He apparently wasn't up for it.
Yeah. No, well, after his successful stint in
I can't remember which Saudi club it was.
It's Etifaki.
Al Etifak, I think that's right.
Yeah, Al Etifak. I think he also plays up front for Liverpool now, but Big Al. Why would you?
Nah, that is one of the main arguments in Fark's favour, is that there isn't someone out there.
Yeah.
But obviously, it is not our job to pick a replacement. So I'm not going to say, would you sack him? Because I think that's a bit too binary. Do you think Daniel Fark can keep us up?
I'm going to say yes. I think it would be tight, and I think it would very much be a case of you would have to have a couple of extra players coming in January.
Yeah.
But I think it could be done.
You see, that's but, I just don't think he's got it in him. I don't think he's flexible enough.
Like, if we could just get Josh Sargent, right? Like, get him in instead of Metcher and Calvert-Lewin.
Yeah.
Get Brendan Aaronson in just behind him.
And Teemu Pukki.
Tearing it up in the MLS.
Yeah.
I think it's possible, but yeah, I can't see all of those. I also can't see all of those things happening together. Like it.
No.
Yeah, so I think at this point it very much depends on who becomes available.
Yeah, well, that is one of the things that we'll say. It might be that someone loses a job somewhere, and everyone goes, "That might work."
Yeah, Juric is available now.
Yeah, that won't work. He's not good. How the hell he ended up getting the Atalanta job is beyond me.
Well, he was only at Roma for about 6 weeks.
Yeah, that's it. It's not like, oh, yeah, he failed miserably in England, but he did well in it. No, he just did badly there as well.
Yeah. Well.
Alex said in the comments that he'd like Cesc Fabregas. He is not leaving Como, mate. More realistic is Gus Poyet. I don't know what Poyet's done in the last 3 years. That's one of them where you might be right, and I have no, but I'm ignorant. I have no idea where he's been or what he's been doing.
I mean, I did, as a name that just popped into my head the other day, I did find out that Andre Villas-Boas is one coaching somewhere in the Middle East, but is also like the president of one of the Portuguese clubs.
Yeah. Gus Poyet has been managing Jeonbuk Hyundai, which is South Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, they are top. They won the league, so.
He's done all he can do in that division.
Yeah. And then to get his president to play 5-3-2 against from top teams, it has to be Big Sam. That's it. Big brain, Big Sam. You're right. That worked so well before. But no, I mean, Poyet might even be a good option. I have no idea. But I know that he also falls out with everyone he works with all the time.
And just don't let him in the opposition dressing room.
Allegedly. No, allegedly. That doesn't need allegedly. It's only allegedly if you get specific. Yeah. Cool. But yeah, that will do us for episode 332 of the Mike White's podcast. We will probably, I mean, I don't know when. If some news breaks, we'll do one at short notice. If not, it'll probably be sometime next week to preview Villa. But yeah, it's not looking great.
No, but no. Like I say, just beat Villa, get a point against Liverpool, and everything's fine.
Everything will feel fine. Yep. Yeah. Avi and Jack, see ya.
Let me KC, have a good one.
In a bit.